This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a toe-tapping musical stage extravaganza, a film festival with an accent on design, or a Latin-flavored dinner and dance concert, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Summer Lyric Theater at Tulane celebrates its 52nd season with the Tony Award-winning Broadway musical, 42nd Street, the high-spirited song and dance extravaganza by Harry Warren, Al Dubin, Michael Stewart, and Mark Bramble is based on the novel by Bradford Ropes and the 1933 Academy Award-winning musical film. Director-choreographer Diane Lala joins us with actress Abigail Isom. Welcome.
Thanks.
Was it a long shot in 1980 to successfully bring a film musical to the Broadway stage?
Well, I think it was ambitious. You know, at the heart of the story is that old-fashioned chorus girl takes over the lead and triumphs. The story, they're putting on the biggest musical, Pretty Lady, as people are trying to recover from the Depression. So when they originally did this, producer David Merrick hired Gower Champion, and they put this movie into a Broadway play. And the thing about it is, you know, that first moment of the show when you see all those tap dancing feet, and then Gower Champion just continued to create these big production numbers featuring tap that hadn't really been done before on Broadway.
And lucky for us, it was a hit.
It was a huge hit. It's a great show about putting on a show, because there's the show within the show and the ups and downs that go along with it. And then that fairy tale story of the kid from Allentown, Pennsylvania, who gets in her first show and then suddenly ends up taking over as the lead and goes on to great triumph.
And that kid would be you, Abigail.
Yep.
This is a big moment for you as you are making your debut with Summer Lyric Theater. Tell us, how did it happen for you?
It all kind of happened very fast. I think they were a little bit down to the wire with trying to find someone for the role, and I was so excited that I get to come do it. It's definitely been a dream role of mine for a long time. I've been tap dancing since I was like 3 years old, I think, and I've never actually seen the show either, so it's been really cool to kind of experience it for the first time, kind of just being thrown in. It's so cool to get to like experience the choreography and the show for the first time here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. You're in from New York?
Yes, I live in New York City. I just graduated from Otterbein University in the spring. So this is one of my first jobs, kind of like Peggy Sawyer, one of my first jobs right out of the gate. Quite a big role, but I'm learning so much being able to tackle it here.
You're starring in the role of Peggy Sawyer. Tell us about that role and what attracted you to the character.
I'm very in awe of Peggy's optimism and how she always puts her best foot forward, even though like sometimes it always doesn't work out for her. But I think she has like great will and determination that sets her apart from the rest of the group and ultimately leads to her success. It's great to grow into her and see her grow up throughout the show, too. She goes from this, you know, little kid from Allentown to truly a leading woman on the stage right before our eyes. And that's been really cool.
And Diane, what excites you in arranging the dances for this big production?
Well, I remember seeing a tour of 42nd Street when I was in my late teens. And when the show is coming towards the end and we have that, they call it the 42nd Street Ballet, I was in awe because I had never thought of tap dance in the way that it was being presented, that it was telling a story and it was sexy and it was all these different things. It wasn't just show stopping, lots of feet tapping. I'd always loved tap, but it changed how I thought of tap dancing and made it much more of an integral part, for example, in this particular piece, of the story and how the dancers express themselves. I've always wanted to do the show. It's not a show that a lot of people put on because it's really big. Lots of costumes, lots of set. It's a difficult show to do. And of course, in our Summer Lyric 3-week timeline from first day to closing, it's a challenge.
And I hear that it's a star-studded cast of local favorites.
It is. We have Chris Carey playing Julian Marsh, the director. Liz Argus is playing Dorothy Brock, who is the original star of the show, who goes down and then Peggy takes over. Also back with us is Ian Blanco. He is Andy Lee, the dance captain, and he's also my dance captain, which he's just invaluable. He's just a treasure. We also have Keith and Leslie Clavery playing the writers of the show. Sean Patterson is in it. Anthony Harvey is playing Billy Lawler. We have quite a group.
And Abigail, what are some of your big numbers?
Peggy's first big number she does with Billy is Young and Healthy, which is an old classic duet. Go Into Your Dance is another big number. You get to see Peggy tap dance for the first time. There's a lovely number in Act Two with Dorothy that they sing a duet together right before the finale called A Quarter to Nine. And then, of course, the big 42nd Street Ballet, which features almost the entire cast of Hoofers.
And I just have to add, this girl is like a tapping machine. She's so fast at picking stuff up, and she executes it so well. It's like made my job super easy.
Might the momentum from the stage provide a toe-tapping, feel-good moment for audiences?
It's a feel-good show. People will know a lot of the music from it. You can't not go out humming. So I think you're in for a treat.
Award-winning director, choreographer Diane Lala, and actress Abigail Isom, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Summer Lyric Theater at Tulane presents the Tony Award-winning Broadway musical, 42nd Street, with performances running June 20th through 23rd in Dixon Hall on Tulane University's campus. More info is online at summerlyric.tulane.edu. The Contemporary Arts Center is ground zero for anyone with an eye for design. The 4th Annual Architecture and Design Film Festival gets underway this week. It is presented by the Louisiana Architecture Foundation. More than 20 films will be screened on a variety of topics. Stacy Fingston is the Executive Director of the Louisiana Architecture Foundation. She joins us. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Diane. It's great to be here today.
It's hard not to have an eye for design living in the architecturally rich landscape of New Orleans. What makes our city an attractive host for this unique film festival?
You know, when you think of New Orleans, you think of festivals to begin with. But I think our rich context of architectural styles is a perfect place.
It's a young festival for our city. How did it get its start?
I came on as the first executive director of the Louisiana Architecture Foundation about 4 years ago, even though we've been around for about 20 years. When I first came on, we started doing public programming. And I heard of the Architecture and Design Film Fest, what's been around 11 years now, and it started in New York City by the founder, Kyle Bergman. I was exposed to that when I lived in Chicago. And when I started with the foundation, I was looking for something that really would give the general public more access to architecture and understanding architecture and getting engaged and inspired by architecture. And I thought a film festival is perfect for that. We can expose you to something going on throughout the world, and either you'll learn about an architect maybe you heard the name of, you may learn about a particular building, or it may be about your sense of home and place, as one of our popular films, Human Shelter, we're going to be showing.
And speaking of Human Shelter, that is going to be shown on opening night. It's a curious film. Tell me what's being examined.
Well, it examines what constitutes home for us. Is it shelter? Is it within our soul? Do we carry home with us when we travel or when we move and relocate? This film touches on very important issues that our world is facing. You know, the refugee crisis, climate change, things like that. It's a thinking piece. It's not about a particular building or an architect, but you're going to come away thinking like, well, what do I think of when I think of home? You know, is it my sanctuary when I get home from a 12-hour workday? And it's going to be, I think, something different for everyone.
Can you give us an example?
One of my favorite pieces in the film is a man who builds his home in a treehouse in Uganda. You see how it's simply furnished. And he's so happy there. It was a dream of his to be in a treehouse. And then it touches on the refugee crisis in Iraq and how people are leaving conflict and happy to be alive. And they are creating their sense of home in this shelter, this temporary shelter. And they're either bringing wall coverings that they had in their former home. There's a man that I was very charmed with that was bringing his suit collection. And I think probably to him, that was important to him. Maybe he was a businessman in Iraq, and that was his sense of worth, getting dressed up every day in a suit, you know, and people are bringing different aspects from their former lives with them. It's a really compelling film. We have your design demigods that are featured in this film festival, such as Mies van der Rohe is a name I think people hear. Famous for bringing in the steel glass curtain wall, you know, big buildings like the IBM building in Chicago, Crown Hall, you know, other monuments like that. We have Frank Lloyd Wright, who is always a favorite in both his architectural styles. He brought the prairie style, started in Illinois, but this film touches on his Mayan palaces in Los Angeles. They're monolithic. They're all out of concrete. Another interesting one that I really liked is called Gaming in the Real World. That is about something very popular with our, you know, teens and actually tweens. Is that the term for the, like, the 11 and 12-year-olds?
The in-between.
My nephew. I think the reason I really like this film is that I know a lot about Minecraft due to my nephew. And that's a computer game. And you're building and creating architecture, and you're designing, you know, your house, or you're designing, you know, plazas or things in this computer game, widely popular. But they're starting to utilize this technology. So they're taking a game that, you know, 11 and 12 year olds are popularly using and turning it into an urban planning tool in some obscure areas throughout the world, which I find fascinating.
To solve housing problems.
To solve housing problems, to solve planning problems with streetscapes and plazas and looking at how people relate to them. It's an interesting film.
You also have some major speakers.
We do. We have three VIPs in the architectural world. One is the author of a best-selling novel on Philip Johnson's called The Man in the Glass House. That's Mark Lamster, and he's the current Dallas architecture critic. We are bringing the director of That Far Corner, the Frank Lloyd Wright in Los Angeles film, Christopher Hawthorne, and he is the former Los Angeles Times architecture critic, and he's currently the chief design officer of the city of Los Angeles. And then we're bringing Bob Hale, who comes from the firm Rios, Clementi, and Hale Studios. He's going to be doing a lecture talking about anything from housewares to plazas to parks that they have designed. What Bob has done that you probably see in the Noma gift shop is the plates that are maps of New Orleans. Have you seen those decorative plates that are really neat? He did those, so people probably have seen his work.
Wow. And there's another film on the African American Museum in Washington, D.C.
Yes, that is called the Black Museum. Actually, the design of it has a nod to New Orleans, and it has a welcoming porch, or they call it a welcoming porch, is how you enter. And that is a nod to our porches here in New Orleans. The architect, David Adjaye, is a British-born architect. I think Ghanaian is his background, and he has a piece here in New Orleans. He designed the Rusty Rainbow Bridge, which carries you over to Crescent Park. So the building itself is just exquisite. It is bronze cast, like iron panels, gorgeous in its design. It kind of takes you through your own personal tour of the curatorial aspect of the building as well and of the museum. And what I like about that is we're going to bring the African American Museum to you through the film festival. I'm very excited about that film.
Where would you say design is heading as we approach a new decade?
Well, especially here in New Orleans, and I think due to the climatic disasters we've had throughout the nation, I think our architects and our designers and our urban planners are really having to think about, you know, not only something designed nice in aesthetics, but functional and practical on how we need to adapt to our current changes that we're experiencing in our environment. You know, housing that is hurricane-proof, urban plazas that will take in water, so lessons of flooding, you know, something we're doing here with Maribel Gardens with Wagner and Bell. It's an interesting time to be building and designing and, you know, planning urban scapes because there's a lot more involved right now due to our world issues with climate.
Will we look at our city in a different light after this film festival experience?
it heightens your design experience when you are sitting through these films. I think you look up more. I think you notice little details more because these films pull that out. And I think it maybe strengthens your design eye in some ways, but makes you more curious about our world we're living in here in New Orleans. And it's inspiring.
Stacy Fingston, Executive Director of the Louisiana Architecture Foundation. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Diane. It was a pleasure.
Remember back to when you were little and you used to like to build things?
Everyone knows video games are played for fun, but could they also be used to change the world around us?
It's mind-blowing. We're taking something in a video game.
The 4th Annual Architecture and Design Film Festival opens Thursday, June 20th at the Contemporary Arts Center and runs through Sunday, June 23rd. More info is online at adfilmfest.com. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. A musical journey to the Caribbean awaits you at the World War II Museum's BB's Stage Door Canteen as singer-songwriter Margie Perez and saxophonist Brent Rose pump up the volume in a Latin-themed dine and dance featuring the New Orleans-based band Muévelo, which means move it. They're hoping that's what you'll do as the rhythm gets you. Margie Perez is here. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You are taking us back in time. What was the inspiration for this Latin musical adventure? Where will we go?
Well, our band Muévelo started as a tribute to Celia Cruz. That was our first gig. And then we just expanded it to more music of that era, like, you know, like old-style Cuban music. I got an opportunity to approach the people at the museum. I said, you know, how about doing a Latin show of the 40s and 50s era? And they were like, great idea. So they have a Caribbean menu that they're going to have. 6 o'clock is dinner, and then at 7 o'clock we start our show. We'll be playing music from the 40s and 50s. It's just incredible music. Since I put this band together with Brent, I've just been discovering all this incredible music that's kind of been hidden away. I love being able to sing it.
Tell me about how you formed as a group.
We had a gig at the Ellis Marsalis Center. They asked me to put together a show for Hispanic Heritage Month. And that was in October, which is also Celia Cruz's birthday. So we did a celebration of her music. So I did some research and I looked at the timeline of the music that she was making, you know, starting in the late 40s to like the 2000s was when she put out the last of her music. So we did a timeline. We had such a great time. And Brent was like, you know, we put all these charts together and everything. We should just keep it going. We're a 9-piece, now 10-piece band, because we added a percussionist, a third percussionist. It's so much fun. And so we just started playing gigs. We do a regular once a month at the Three Keys at the Ace Hotel. And then we play around, you know, wherever anybody has a need for a 10-piece Latin band. And so we bring it to the people.
That's a big band. Now, you are not a native New Orleanian, but right. have adopted it as your musical home.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to settle here.
I'm from D.C. originally. I started singing in bands later in life. I really didn't go through any kind of musical education. Karaoke was my musical education.
That was your entry?
Yeah. And so I joined a couple of bands, and one of them would go to Jazz Fest every year. And they were like, you've never been to Jazz Fest, you have to go. And I went, I started going every year for 10 years straight. And then, you know, I just wanted a life change. And a friend of mine suggested, well, why don't you move to New Orleans? And I was like, why don't I? And that was 15 years ago. I had a place to live and I was in a band before I got a job. So I knew that everything was going to work itself out.
It had to.
Yeah.
So tell us, what will you perform?
So we'll be doing like songs by Desi Arnaz. People will remember him from I Love Lucy. Yeah. He was Ricky Ricardo. He was an incredible band leader. I've been looking at some of these old videos, and there's this one that's especially that's so cute. He's singing, and Lucy and Ethel are sitting in the background, and they're just dancing like crazy, and it's so cute. And he's just a powerhouse singer and, you know, band leader and everything. We're also doing music by Perez Prado He was famous for Mambo No. 5, which we'll be doing, and Benny More, who was another Cuban artist, like Celia Cruz, who was just, you know, they left Cuba and they started making music in Mexico. You know, another group called Sonora Matancera, which is a group that Celia Cruz was with. We have another singer in the band, Celia Acea, and her voice suits ballads so well. My voice is more like Celia Cruz is, where I'm just like, boom, you know, I'm out there. I'm not very soft. so she takes care of the soft music, which is great because we, you know, we complement each other very well. I like to think that this is kind of a throwback to the Tropicana, the golden age of Latin music, and where people were traipsing to Cuba before the revolution, you know, and, where everything was kind of excess. You know, Cuba was the Las Vegas of the Caribbean at the time. I'm hoping that this is kind of a throwback to that era. This will be our little USO show, you know. Yeah. I hope we have a full dance floor. Oh, it's just such good music.
Singer-songwriter Margie Perez, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Margie Perez and her band Muévelo kick it in concert in a 1940s and 50s themed dine and dance evening of Latin music at the World War II Museum's BB Stage Door Canteen, Saturday, June 22nd. More info at nationalworldwar2museum.org. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Helles Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.